This is The Good Die Young, the podcast where we deep dive into the greatest television you barely saw. I'm your host, Les Weiler. Join me as I take you through what made these shows too pretty to live. This is The Good Die Young. Season 1, The Middleman. All right, welcome to The Good Die Young, The Middleman. This is Les. This time I'm here with Randy Lander.
Hey, how's it going?
Co-host from the TV Dudes. This time we're going to be talking about episode 12, the palindrome reversal palindrome. So, Randy, how did you first get into Middleman?
Les, you know damn well how I got into Middleman. So, this show for me was a show where I'd read the first four issues of the comic way back when. And when it came on ABC Family, I watched the first episode. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. And then it vanished off the airwaves, as I'm sure you're well aware. And so it went into that bin of, one of these days I'll get around to watching that. I hear it's good. I hear it's, people seem to like it. And then ATX Fest came and went. Javi Grillo Marchwatch, who I've met and talked to a couple times, who I really like, was there. And I'm like, I should really watch his show and talk to him. And I didn't, but you did. Then you decided to do this podcast. And you're like, hey, Randy, do you want to co-host an episode with me? And I was like, oh, well, you know, I like talking with Les. We're TV Dudes buds. He did an episode of my Beach Cop podcast. So I should do this. Yeah, I'll do it. And I bought the DVDs and I watched every episode. And now I love this show and I miss it. And there's a hole in my heart that wasn't there before this week.
So glad that I could add to the perforations of your heart.
I watched the YouTube live read of episode 14 like a damn junkie because of this.
Well, it's only fair because the entire reason that I'm doing a deep dive podcast that's consuming this much of my time is because of your show about a dog.
Yes, yes.
Beach Cop Detectives, your deep dive about terriers.
Yes, so at least the madness I've inflicted on you is equal to what you've done to me.
Yes, so now we fight to the death. Palindrome Reversal Palindrome, written by Jordan Rosenberg and directed by Guy B. And that's not a director's name that jumps out at me, but when I looked at his IMDb, it looks like he's done Supernatural episodes. There's just a weird variety of genre TV to this guy's credit.
Yeah, this dude has done like every genre show. I started looking and it's like he's a gun for hire. He does like, you know, two or three episodes or one or two, but he's worked on a lot of genre TV.
An iZombie episode, several Arrow episodes, Tomorrow People.
Yeah, you think of a genre show, especially a CW genre show, this guy's probably directed an episode. And it's all shows I like.
The story that I got from Javi at the Middleman panel at ATX Fest was that when they found out the show was going to be canceled, they had a 13-episode season. And so that 2009 table read of issue 13 of the comic, or episode 13, that would have been a filmed episode. But they told Javi, look, the show's ending either way. And he said, if we don't do an episode 13, will you just give us the budget money from it?
Oh.
And so that's how episode 12 has a dystopian parallel world
that
and gunfire. And
because in my notes, as I'm watching it, I made a note to myself. I'm like, this is a pretty solid looking dystopia for a TV budget of this caliber.
It's so two that, TV budgets.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I love looking at we'll talk about it later, but what I'm pretty sure are just airbrushes that are spraying soup into people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this episode opens at HQ. Wendy and the middleman are discussing a recent theft of a beryllium sphere, which referenced from
Galaxy Quest. I caught that one right away.
And an oscillation overthruster.
That one I didn't catch right away because it's not a show. It's not a movie. I know that.
Oh, it's Buckaroo Banzai. Yeah, yep. I love Galaxy Quest, but I had to look up to make sure that the beryllium sphere was their dilithium crystal. But
yeah,
oscillation overthrusters. I love Buckaroo Banzai. God, now I want to go back and rewatch the episode to see if there's a watermelon anywhere.
I don't remember one.
There really might be. And there's also Dubby and Middleman are discussing these etched mirror pictograms that they've gotten two of. One's a little man, and I think one's a light bulb.
Yep.
And so they're not quite sure what to make of these yet. And they've been clearly spitballing ideas for hours.
Yes. I love this scene for two reasons. One is there's a line that Wendy drops where she says,
does this scenario involve me wearing a bikini again?
Not necessarily.
what, is this going to be one of those missions where I have to wear a bikini again? Which to me is implications of, oh, there's missions we haven't seen, which immediately set my head to spinning.
Well, she did in the cryogenic episode. True. That's put her in the Bond, like literally in the Bond bikini.
That's true.
That's true. She finds a jacket out of nowhere in the lair almost immediately, but still.
And then we don't really get to see Matt Keeslar spin out as the character in this way. So him having been on a clue bender for a while, and his crazy rant about Nikola Tesla and how it's the obvious, that killed me. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I loved that.
Our mastermind is none other than the great-great-grandson of Nikola Tesla. Driven mad by accounts that Edison robbed Tesla of his greatest inventions, he intends to resurrect Edison so as to force the confession that Tesla, rather than Edison, truly invented the light bulb.
Wow. Imagine the pearls will be dropping in another 11 hours.
All right. Point taken.
It just like goes off on this entire like freakish idea. He's got a couple of them like that. I think later on he spitballs that like maybe each of the etched mirror clues is to make an infinity mirror.
Yes.
To trap all the light and thus trap all of mankind.
Yeah. It's great to have see him have his supervillain nemesis. He didn't have a candle.
Yeah.
But you start thinking, oh well, maybe this palindrome is going to be his nemesis. No, not so much.
I like that as soon as he even intimates that, hey, we might be able to cut it, like, you know, let's go ahead and call it a night. Ida is gone. Yeah. Like, she's out. I got no idea what this robot has that's better to do.
You know, Ida's, as we watch this episode, and it's been 12 episodes of this, Ida's got a secret life. She clearly likes watching humans have sex a lot. Like, that's a thing that comes up here again. She mentions it. And there's something, yeah, there's a secret life of Ida. There's a whole mini series in that.
Yeah, and there's some relationship to O2STK that is different than the middleman's that I would love to know more about. Yeah, there's so much weird stuff going on.
They'll probably cover it in season two, right?
Right, yeah. I say this in every one of these episodes, so people listening to this are going to be so, the three of you listening to this are going to be so tired of it. But this is a show that doesn't feel heavy on mythology because it doesn't have big arc episodes that take two or three to complete. But you can see the mythology behind everything in every scene.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
The world is deep in every scene.
Yeah, when we got to the end of this and I saw just how many questions were left unanswered, I realized how deep they'd built a world in that short of an episode. Without, like you say, there's not like a Rimbaldi artifact ongoing story. Yeah. But the question of O2S2K and the question of Neville and the question of Wendy's dad and so many other things, not to mention the stories of, you know, Pip's arc and all those other arcs for the characters.
Yeah. You know? Joe 90 even has backstory.
Yeah.
Like everybody. Nozer has a roommate, Anvil.
Yeah. Yeah.
We see him, I think, once. He nearly kills Pip.
Mm-hmm.
So that the scene also, I think, first introduces the obscure crimes database.
Yes.
Different from the Hadar, the OCD.
Uh-oh. OCD's talking and it's talking crazy.
The OCD brings up 1,012, like 1012 possible scenarios for what these mirrors could be good for. So once Ida clears out, then and Wendy goes home to her date with Tyler, and we see a complete reversal of Tyler and Wendy's relationship with work.
Yes. I love that. I love that they did it. I love that they'd set it up so that she can't, and she even calls out that she can't be upset with him going off to do work because she's been doing this to him.
Tyler, you told me that you loved that I had a job I was good at, and I'd be a pretty awful girlfriend if I didn't feel the same way about you, right?
And he did exactly this a couple episodes back. That you think it's going to go one direction, and he's standing outside her door, and she's realizes like, oh crap! Mm-hmm. Like, not only did I stand you up for a date, but like, I'm not going to be home for hours.
Yeah,
and he is totally cool.
Yeah,
you think it's going to zig and it zags. He's like, you know, what kind of boyfriend would I be? You have a job you love.
Yeah, can we talk about how much I love this relationship between the two of them? Because there's no fake drama. There's believable tension. Like, you get the hints of, okay, he is going a little corporate, and that worries her, and it worries him. And he's not entirely cool with her having this mystery job. Like, he makes little jabs about it, but it's a human level. It's a believable relationship where these two trust each other for the most part, but have issues.
Yeah.
And I like that they're the tennis bracelet thing. When he gives the tennis bracelet, and it feels, when he gave it to her, it felt so off. And I was like, this is a weird thing. And then he explains it.
Look, I know, it's not you. Maybe I wasted too many hours of my childhood in Panama watching badly dubbed reruns of Dallas.
Well, who didn't want to know Ken at least put on JR?
But seriously, I have always fantasized about being able to buy my lady diamonds. And I hope you like it. Seeing as how it's completely your fault that I got it for you, because I kind of love you.
And it makes sense. And then there's a callback later in the episode where she says somebody says something about, like, I don't want him to become the tennis bracelet guy.
Yeah. Like, and then they actually use that piece of jewelry later in the plot.
Yeah.
Like, I was really happy because it did. It all worked because the bracelet feels wrong. They address it. I love her calling him out on the you kind of love me. Like,
I kind of love you, Wendy Watson.
Really? You kind of love me?
That was an unfortunate turn of phrase.
Oh, yes, bad so phrasing. Good. Heard it as soon as I said it. Yeah. So he's hours late for dinner, and then they have their scene where he gives her the tennis bracelet. Then immediately, per this discussion, her watch goes off and his phone rings at the same time.
Yes.
Just this one call and then the watch and the Bluetooth.
Taking a nap in the freezer. Deal.
Wendy's relationship with love and what jobs take from you is, I feel like, one of the main themes of this show.
Yeah,
Wendy lost
sure.
her dad in some kind of, as yet unexplained, circumstances, but work-related. He was flying something somewhere and vanished. So his mysterious job took him away. But we have several episodes that end on, for instance, the Cursed Tuba episode prior mm-hmm. to this, ends on a long shot of Dubby watching Middleman and Lacey have to agree as adults that they can't date.
Right.
Vampire Lamentation 1 actually proves outright that it is true love.
Yeah.
You actually have a spell that can't have worked if it weren't real.
Right.
So it's not just BS lust.
Well, and the flip side of that I think is interesting is that in almost any other show, being an artist would be the thing she was frittering her time away at before she found her calling. And instead, is never they never indicate that art isn't important. Like Noser and Wendy and Lacey, they're all artists.
Yeah.
And this notion of
everyone
art being
in the building.
Important. Yeah, this notion of art being important, bohemian art that is not going to make you any money. Tyler's an artist.
Yeah.
Like he's a musician and his art is, you know, references to why he doesn't want this job that he takes in the previous episode. So all this art is important and makes as much importance as saving the world is throughout.
And the middleman will argue for it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moments where you think as the authority figure in an Eisenhower jacket that he's going to go, what's the, you know,
right.
go to that hippie. And no, he is completely like, this is why we fight.
The angriest we've seen is when somebody plagiarizes her paintings.
Yes. Yes, he absolutely flips out over over Pip plagiarizing.
And
her
you're right;
work.
That's a good point. That's not the stereotype of the '50s white guy drinking milk. That he wouldn't have any use for hippie art, but he loves it.
Yeah, and actually, you mentioned milk at the very start of this episode. Where he's finishing a big old glass of milk.
Yep.
I was waiting for him to say something like "damn fine cow squirt." Or,
by the way, you do remember what Tyler and Wendy are eating at dinner, right?
Hot Pockets are the American empanada.
The American empanada.
The American empanada. A cold pocket, rather. Yeah, I love that. So once their various alarms go off, Wendy, of course, has to respond to her middle watch. Tyler is going to have to respond to something wrong with the one laptop per child program, but it's
right.
the one you master per child
yes.
program that involves some angry governor. And anyway, they think they've got 15 or 20 minutes until Tyler's cab gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And the helicopter lands.
Yes.
Well, you don't see it land, but you hear Monservant Neville yell down from the helicopter, Tyler, come on. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And so he's his master's voice. He's got to go.
Hurry. We're landing on the roof. I'll call you tomorrow.
Yeah. By the way, one of the things they do well here is they make use of their small budget. I mean, even on a doubled budget. Mm-hmm. And so lights and some sound effects. I bought that helicopter.
Oh, yeah, totally believable. Middleman really managed to do great with that. Wendy heads back to headquarters. We really don't see where Tyler goes from here.
Before we get off Tyler, I did want to mention one thing. He reminds me a lot of the Greg character from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the sort of
yes.
decent but maybe a little screwed up guy. And I also found it interesting. He's playing Superion, the like Superman guy, in the new Tick.
Oh, I didn't realize
and
that.
And he's perfect for
Brendan
it.
Hines is? Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
He does remind me a lot of Greg from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I had to look and make sure it wasn't the same guy.
Yeah, no, it's not the same actor.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's Brendan Hines is not Greg on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
So this is where we really start the Escape from New York references in earnest.
Very much so, yeah.
Today, we're grief counselors with the United States Police Force. You're Officer Russell. I'm Officer Van Cleef.
Because you've got Russell, you've got Kurt Russell, you've got Lee Van Cleef.
Yep.
So Officers Russell and Van Cleef, United States Police Force. Even the gas, which I had to look up, polydichloride.
Nah. Polydichloric euthanol.
Eyes without a face! Polydichloric euthanol, you fool! Do you have any idea what you've done?
That is the explosive used to bring down Cyberdyne building in Terminator 2.
Nice.
And I had to look up like where that reference possibly came from. Yeah, so they show up at the Duke of New York toy factory,
yep.
Which Duke of New York being a, was it Isaac Hayes' character?
I believe that's correct.
In Escape from New York. And I love the toy shop owner just standing there freaking out with this mound of eyeless babies behind him.
That toy owner gives, it's like he's doing his Oscar speech.
Yes.
He's like, what am I going to do? And it killed me.
Who steals baby eyes? She was so sweet. Now she's blind. They're all blind. I don't get it. I work hard. I support a wife, an ex-wife, two ingrate kids. I went green before Ed Begley Jr. made it cool. Why can't I cut a break? What about me?
So all of these baby eyes are missing because they're irises, because he's gone green, and the irises are made out of some weird material.
Yep.
Which is the polydichloric euthanol.
The last ingredient needed to make a quantum singularity machine, which can open a mini black hole.
Yes.
To which the middleman exclaims,
"My little pony." The palindrome lifts up the space-time continuum's petticoats. Will all be trussed up, but good.
He apologizes later and says, "Sorry, I popped my cork back there, but this is a sack of eels and coat hangers." I've never heard that euphemism before, nope. But I know like, immediately that's not a sack I want to reach into.
Nope.
Whether I need an eel or a coat hanger, either way.
Yeah, you don't store those together. It's dangerous.
It just sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Knowing now what they're up against, that somebody's making a quantum singularity machine, Hadar gets the Addy almost immediately, and it's Carpenter Road.
Yeah.
Which says John Carpenter. They immediately find another mirror that just has a hat on it. And I love that Dubby's like, they're not even trying. That's not even like a Panama hat. That's just a hat. But by this point, they've already figured out the palindrome, correct?
Yeah.
Which is a man. I should say at the baby doll at the toy shop theft, or rather the toy warehouse theft, they find one last mirror that has three little wavy lines on it.
Yep.
They realize that it's a man, a plan. So the stick figure, the light bulb, and the three wavy lines. Man, a plan, a canal.
A man, a light bulb, and a river. Maybe this plan is to confuse the hell out of us.
Plan? Dubby. A man, a plan, not a river, but a canal.
A man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
Put the clues together, they're the perfect palindrome. Same phrase forward, same phrase backward.
Who leaves a palindrome?
Typical supervillain horse feathers. Can't wait to hear this guy's monologue.
And middleman goes off on like what kind of stupid crap villain called the palindrome might pull.
Yes, yes.
And like you could just see him working it up his head of like, oh, okay, this is going to be the arch nemesis I'm going to have to fight. how terrible the monologues are going to be and all this stuff. Like, I love it. When they show up and they find the canal or find the Panama hat one and they see the guy like look up and they immediately see Kevin Sussman, the actor who's playing, they don't know his name yet, but the palindrome is what they're calling him.
Yep.
And he is assembling the quantum singularity machine. Dubby tries to sneak around to stop him, and middleman is going to engage him in monologuing.
He's gonna get a monologue.
And dude does not monologue at all.
No. He's the sort of genial frustration of the middleman is like, there's nothing you want to get off your chest?
Don't want to go into the elegance of this plan, nothing? Yeah. And the guy just hits the button and throws his arms out and a black hole opens behind him. And the weirdest, I know they spent money on this effect, but the tentacle effect I didn't care for.
It was pretty low key, but yeah, I'll forgive it because of how much work they put.
Whatever,
in
it was there, yeah. And so an energy tentacle whoops out of the hole, and grabs him and pulls the palindrome into the black hole, and he's gone. Grabs a bunch of other crap, and it knocks. I think it grabs a barrel or something.
Yeah, and knocks the middleman out.
Yeah, knocks
the
middleman out. So he doesn't see that Wendy gets grabbed and pulled into the black hole.
Right.
Just before the hole closes, or rather, we cut to commercial.
Right.
When it comes back, captions. Love the location captions.
Yes.
Every
time. It's a callback to the last episode, too.
Yeah. The where am I? How long have I been out?
Yes.
Wendy wakes up to the palindrome, putting away the device, and the whole place is this grayed out, just dystopia.
The color tint was a great choice. I mean, yes. It's been used in numerous other shows. Awake famously used it to distinguish between the timelines, but it really works here. And it also sells the sort of misery of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got this like Joe versus the Volcano opening, just grayed out, huge fat boy dystopia.
Yep.
And so you have manservant Neville, who there's posters everywhere that, you know, manservant Neville serves you.
He's got a goatee. Very importantly, he's has got a goatee.
Everybody's in these long lines while these like jackbooted shock troops, or I think Lacey actually calls them stormtroopers later.
Yeah.
Are like airbrush spraying soup. Like,
yes.
So
every day you get a compressed, it's a socialist nightmare. Every day you get a burst of compressed soup
with this like placid manservant Neville's voice of, you know, we are all brothers. Everyone is of the human.
I believe in you, my children, and all I ask in return is that you believe in me as your father, your architect, your first among equals. Remember, manservant Neville serves you.
So I had three thoughts very rapidly upon seeing this. I'm like, oh, she's in an alternate universe. Oh, this is the reveal that Fatboy Industries is evil and Neville's evil, and this is going to pay back to what we know. We've seen him, the hints that might be sinister. Oh, he's got a goatee, so maybe he's good in our universe. And immediately I was like, okay, good. This is evil Neville, so he's not going to be revealed to be a bad guy in our universe. Fatboy in this universe took over. Oh, it's a mirror universe scenario. Got it. And I was there. I thought I was there. They had some tricks to throw at us.
They really do. I had a moment, the more times I've watched this episode, where I'm thinking like, okay, is dystopian Neville, he seems to have meant well.
Yeah.
Like, is the execution bad? Is the intention bad? Like, which one's evil? Because right. I don't believe that our universe, manservant Neville with the U-Master, I don't believe he's a shiny...
No, I believe by the end of this episode, I've come to believe that he was a bad guy. We were going to find more about that.
Yeah, I feel like in season two, we were going to find out that our happy-go-lucky manservant.
Well, and they have it's such a mirror of the middleman organization. I assumed he was the evil middleman, essentially. The, you know, Greg's test in the previous episode was a flash, was a complete riff on Wendy's test.
Yes. Oh, that's true.
And we know that Greg was a potential middleman. In fact, in this world, he was a middle boy. And so the notion I had was, okay, so in our world, manservant Neville is sort of the evil, they're the evil middleman organization.
Yeah,
the middleman deals
sense.
With other things. They're the ones who use it for their own gain.
And in the mirror universe world, we find out later that the middleman is missing something that we need
right.
because he sold it to manservant Neville.
But I do love how Dubby describes to the middleman, she's still in contact with at this point. Right? Doesn't she have turn her watch connect to him?
No. She can't connect. Yep.
She says something to somebody about how she feels like she's in the night. She refers them.
She's just talking into her watch. So, okay. If you can hear this, yeah, I feel like I'm in Alan Parker's 1982 theatrical film of The Wall.
Yeah.
Which is
I love the specificity of it. Like, yes. She didn't just say The Wall. It's the specificity of the references. And it's one of the things Middleman does so well is that not only is it throwing out these references for everybody to catch, it is not. It's not trying to be too hip for the room. Like they're definitely saying like, here's a reference. If you catch it, that's great. And if you don't, here's where you can go Google it and find more out about this pop culture we all love. Yeah, I don't know where I saw this, but I thought I saw Javi talking about basically that when he was building this, that originally it was supposed to be to make fun of all these genre cliches, and somewhere along the line they all fell in love with it.
It takes these tropes and it subverts them, but not in a let's grimdark this kind of way. It subverts them in a there's clearly a love there.
Yeah.
So back in our universe, we have Middleman who says one of my favorite lines in the episode.
Come puppet, blood, monkey, fudge, or terracotta, I'm getting her back.
Which is a wonderful aside callback to a bunch of earlier episodes.
Yep.
Wendy manages to get back in the mirror universe to where her apartment would be.
An evil hallway in an evil parallel universe.
Yes. And in an amazing callback to the... first episode, and the first time we see Noser, he does the same. I believe that's the same.
It is the same song. Riff on the Shaft, but much angrier and armed.
Yes.
Who's the man?
Noser, thank God.
I said, who's the man?
That would be Shaft.
What kind of man?
A complicated man.
Who understands him?
Noser, please.
Answer me now.
No one but his woman.
Right on. You can go in.
Yes, and it, this time it's more of like a password
yes,
thing you've got to do.
I loved it.
And it also works out as an oblique Escape from New York reference.
Good point, because...
Because Duke of New York is played by Isaac Hayes, who yes, wrote the Shaft theme.
Indeed.
So it all comes full circle. But yeah, so Noser does a very, very intense, who's the man? Oh, Noser, thank God. I said, who's the man? And he clears that shotgun. Yeah. Who's the man?
I love alternate world Noser.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dark Noser is the man. Yeah. I would love to find out if, like, Dark Noser constantly shows off all his talents.
Right.
Or if Dark Noser is, like, utterly creatively blank and does nothing or what.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's just great. Yeah, a little bit later, he gets to fight back against like a whole elevator full of armed guards. Like the last thing we see him yell is, die, pigs.
Die, pigs.
Yeah. After clearing the shaft test, Wendy gets to go into the apartment, which it's an illegal sublet that's now a strip club, basically.
An evil loft in an evil parallel universe, as the caption informs. And she says, why wouldn't my living room be an exotic dancer lounge?
Yeah. And Joe 90, Esquire.
Yes.
With a goatee, who's a fat boy lawyer.
Using the word booby. Did you catch that? This was what she was afraid of. She mentions in this, I think it was this episode, she mentions that she's afraid of Tyler mm-hmm. becoming one of these corporate guys who uses the word booby.
And what if he turns into tennis bracelet guy full time? What if he starts calling people booby?
And that Joe is what 90, Joe 90 is.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe 90, Esquire, turning to fat boy. Yeah, booby, I got a high security clearance.
Then we get to see Dark Laser, Evil Lacey.
Yes.
Who's running this like a gin joint speakeasy. I just love that like this is what Lacey's found to do after what were clearly a couple of years in fat boy concentration camps.
Yes.
But the fat boy concentration camp is darning camp.
Yes.
Because you've got somebody has to upkeep stormtrooper socks and underwear.
Yes.
I don't know how, that never occurred to me as like a thing that armies need.
Yes. It's very important. The other thing I really enjoyed is this, and I don't know if it was a direct reference, but I got a very big Biff's Palace vibe off yes. the loft. It was the look how corrupt and decadent this has all become in this alternate darker world.
Yes, yeah, and I believe this show predates Fringe, but they did something later in I think the last season of Fringe where the observers are running things mm-hmm. and they have like a speakeasy where like corrupt observers are just obnoxious.
Yep.
The more, you know, how corrupt can this world be? Just crack me up. Evil Lacey, Evil Noser. Of course, yep. Evil Lacey slaps the taste out of Duffy's Debbie's mouth
yes.
for abandoning her because we find out that when Fat Boy took over, was their freshman year of college
mm-hmm.
and Wendy immediately decided to throw in with Fat Boy.
Well, that's the story we're getting from Lacey at any rate.
Yeah.
Sounds like one of these things where she's like, you know, you set me up. We were supposed to do this and I showed up and they grabbed me. And the thing that I was sort of being set up for at this point was like, okay, well, what is the Wendy Watson's universe like? Clearly this didn't go down like this. Like maybe she's working for the middleman somehow. Maybe there's something else. And I wasn't prepared for where they were going.
Yeah.
I got there a little quicker. But at this point, I was still thinking, oh, this Wendy Watson, something happened here, but she's misinterpreting what happened.
Yeah. But Lacey is definitely hating on Wendy and decides to throw her out, has Noser take her out of the apartment. Noser drags her back into the hallway, yep. and immediately guards come off the elevator. And this is where Noser gets to yell, die, pigs, and yep. clear the shotgun again and start firing. And Wendy bails and runs outside the building. Pip pulls up in a car with a hoodie on, throws the door open, and gets to say the Terminator line,
yep.
come with me if you want to live.
Yep. My note here says, of course, in the evil universe, Pip is a good guy and a priest.
You, Pip, a priest, are willing to risk your life for me.
We're all children of the Lord.
I'm in the mirror universe.
I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I love Father Pip. And when she says, like, you know, you've got to take me to see the guy that is so pure in my universe that he's just got to be the same here. And I love Pip's, where can I find this balm in Gilead? Like, Pip's amazing in the mirror universe.
Yes.
And he takes her to, she finds out where the middleman is. She goes to Jolly Fat Weehawken.
They also make a reference to Star Trek here. the yes. Star Trek, is Star Trek starring the great George Takei?
Yes.
And which, by the way, we all love George Takei now.
Yes.
But and she says this is an evil universe, which a great reference because Star Trek coined the mirror universe in a lot of
ways. Oh yeah, yeah. Though they had to make a Star Trek reference. Yeah. Well, and they do. They do. The gun that they have to fire later is also a Star Trek reference.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I love that they make a mirror universe reference. Yeah. And it watching the show now, yeah, it takes me a minute. Took me a minute to figure out like what the joke was there.
Yeah.
Like who doesn't like George Takei?
Everyone loves George Takei.
Yeah. Yeah. So we get to see Wendy end up at the middleman headquarters, and there's evil Ida.
Something just occurred to me.
What's that?
I don't give a baboon's butt about your complicated backstory. Here's how it works. If you got the cash, we got the action. Save the rest of it for your shrink.
Young, hot, evil Ida.
Young, hot, blonde Ida, who sounds exactly the same otherwise. Like, that actress did a great job of mimicking that particular northern accent. And she's got the same flower print dress and everything. She's just thinner. And, of course, she fake bake tans.
Yes.
And brags about not being able to get cancer. And says that she would tan outside, but you can't see the sun anymore.
Yeah.
Which I love the little reminder of, like, oh, yeah, it's a nuclear blasted world.
By the way, before she goes on the tanning bed, I think she gives the they're real and they're spectacular line.
Yes.
Which I did not expect a Seinfeld reference.
No. And it cracked me up in general just because she's entirely synthetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing on her is real. And I just didn't expect that joke at all. Like, that's just hysterical.
I love, and as they go on, and especially by the time we get to this episode, they're increasingly do not care what ABC Family wants.
Yeah.
When the Netflix revival happens as a result of this podcast,
please.
they can go a little bawdier, and that'd be good.
So Ida takes her. I love that Ida's like, no, if you got the money, we'll do it. Like, middleman is a total pay for play organization here. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't throw her out. She takes her to the middleman, who back to him, tattoo on his back, no shirt on, long hair, shaggy hair.
Yep.
He's straight up Kurt Russell from all the Escape from New York movies. He's Snake Plissken. He's working on the middle hog.
Let me guess. You're a middleman in training from a parallel universe. You're chasing an A-number-1 nut job when he opened up a quantum singularity to this world, inadvertently pulling you through with him. And now, little Dorothy just wants to get back home.
He's got the growly voice. Like, Matt Keeslar nailed it here because he's played the middleman very effectively. He's played that character very well. But we saw his range here because he kills it as the evil middleman.
And let me say, Kevin Sorbo is damn lucky that there was not a reason that Matt Keesler needed his shirt off in that entire episode.
Yeah.
Matt Keesler's in better shape than Hercules.
It's true.
Matt Keesler's in fantastic shape in this episode.
Yeah.
Even evil Lacey in the mirror universe still
kinda hot.
Still loves evil middleman. So he won't help her. I love that he won't help Dubby. It's just crazy. Like, no, I'm not helping you. You got to have, you got to feed the greed.
Right. And she doesn't have she has money from our universe.
But she doesn't have chubbies.
She doesn't have chubbies.
And it's fucking Monopoly money. Like, it's just fake Monopoly money with the Fathead logo or Fatboy Industries logo on it. I love how fake the money looks.
Yeah.
And these bad boys, ever since he won the Battle of DC, these bad boys here have been legal tender. But she has the tennis bracelet.
Yep, which is a great, they set it up earlier and it pays off.
Yes, and these scripts are so tight.
Yeah.
Almost every episode, there's a lot of plot in these things, as evidenced anybody who's listened to the rest of these, but they make it count. They make it tie up, and they make it matter. Now that she's, as Evil Middleman puts it, hired herself a bleeping partner.
Yes, I love how much he swears.
Yes, and it's all bleeping, like bleep, 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 with the black box over. Yeah, I love it. From this point forward, they start kind of cutting back and forth into the parallel universe and our universe.
Yeah.
And so our middleman and the evil middleman are both using the Hadar. They both come up with Ivan Avi.
Yes.
Who is the palindrome.
Of course he is.
And they figure out that they're in both universes. They figure out his address. They go see him. And in both universes, Ivan Avi destroys the machine.
Yes.
And in both universes, the middleman takes him prisoner.
Yeah.
And then tries to get information out of him.
But it goes very differently in each universe.
Yes.
By the way, interesting note, Ivan Avi, in the 14th episode table read they do where they bring him back, he is voiced by the writer of this episode.
Jordan Rosenberg.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to have to ask. I get to interview him. And so I'm going to have to ask him about that on this interview. Yeah. I love the the interrogation scenes, they figure out that they're psychically linked.
Yes.
The two palindromes of each other, or the palindrome can talk to himself in each, or think to himself in each universe.
Yeah, and we see the parallel universes in little bubbles, or in little, we see the universes together in screens.
Yeah.
I love the reverse captions.
Yes.
It would have been annoying if they'd done it all the way through.
Yeah, they just do it kind of once.
One gag, perfect.
Yeah, yeah. They start in one scene and then they flip to the back side of it, basically.
Yep. And the parallel video, when it goes, is both middlemen exclaiming together, which is great because one of them says, oh, fooey, and the other one does not.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Ivan tells him, well, you know, the machines are destroyed.
Yeah.
But they were made to mimic shooting a phase polaron cannon at a black hole.
Yep.
And so he's like, well, if we just shoot a phase polaron cannon then, you know, at the same spot, then that'll work. Like, ah, nobody has one of those. And middleman, of like he gets to do in several episodes, just casual, like, I do. My weapon's vault. Just like they already had one of the puppets. It's like they've already had several things.
Yeah.
They've got an asbestos-laced sub.
By the way, I love the origin of these guys. Their connection is the severed pineal gland.
Yes.
Which is a callback to the Ghostbusters episode.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. And I want to say that the good one, he damaged it in a freak limbo accident.
Yes.
At his bar mitzvah.
Yes.
I can't remember if they actually say bar mitzvah, just when he's 13.
Yeah.
That he's just trapped in the crap universe as the nice kid. And then there's this like hellion problem child in our universe.
Yes.
That wants out as well.
And they do use the sheer elegance and simplicity. Yes. Line.
Did you say someone's trapped in my world? But that's horrible. I mean it. It was supposed to be a one-for-one Ivan exchange.
Exchange? Jimmy, crack corn.
You see, our plan was sheer elegance in its simplicity.
I love that he feels genuinely bad that he wrote, like,
yeah.
Like, oh, no, I'm willing to help now. I didn't mean to rope anyone else in.
Yeah.
I just wanted out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he really feels bad.
Yep. And he expresses what the universe is like. There's baby farms, random suffocations, bears.
Yes. It's seas of benzene. Yes. Clouds of ammonia. Yeah, it's just bears. And it's all run by Fat Boy. Middleman gets to exclaim Jimmy Crack Corn at one point.
Yes.
The show is just endlessly goofy and earnest and wonderful all at once. In the mirror universe, in the interrogation, as they're sending the psychic message between the two, Middleman is sending W a message saying, hey, you've got to get a phase polaron cannon. You got to stand in the spot. You got to center of the geographic center of the city and yep. fire. And he gives her coordinates to the nearest black hole.
Yep.
You know, it's a trick, but the guy says, Ivan says, lean in closer. There's more.
Like, yeah.
Oh, come on. W leans in. He immediately grabs her, takes her own weapon, puts it to her head. And I love that Mirror Universe Middleman doesn't hesitate.
Nope.
At all. Just,
kills him.
Now what are you going to... Bam! Like, done.
What's funny is he's still the middleman. Like, that is not the way our middleman would have handled it, but it's still efficient. And, you know, he gets a problem, he solves it.
Yeah, and of course, Dubby flips out. Like, have you come unhinged? Like, you lost your mind?
And he is unrepentant.
Yeah. And I want to say that this is when she tells him, I could have handled that. I was trained by Sensei Ping. And
yes.
And he reveals... Sensei Pingsley, who plucked out his eye.
Holy Kill Bill Volume 2.
Yes. And I love that he also reveals that in retaliation for plucking out his eye, Middleman in the Mirror Universe is actually who dropped the dime to the Luchadors
yes.
for Episode 3. That's just weird and cold.
Yeah.
There's so much nuance to the Mirror Universe that I didn't expect that I love this episode.
Well, that's one of the things that I really like about when you build an alternate universe, the detail that goes into it, like... They had 11 episodes to establish our universe. Mm-hmm. So we knew about Sensei Ping. We knew about, you know, they made references to 4 or 5 different episodes and how it went down differently in this world. And that establishes that this mirror universe has to feel real. It has to feel like it's lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And by using the mirror versions of these episodes, they give us this sense of foundation of, oh, things happen here in a slightly different way, but they did happen.
Yeah, you can call back to episodes that we saw all of, change 2 words, and that's the mirror. And I feel like I lived some of the mirror universe.
Exactly.
So maybe that's their shadow way of having given me a second season.
Or the spinoff that we all want. But that would that be called the man middle? Or it'd be the Nomala Blah.
Let's go with that second one. Man Middle does not sound like a show I want to watch.
That's a different show.
So Wendy decides that, well, she needs a phase polaron cannon. The middleman in our universe assumes that the middleman in their universe would also have one.
Yep.
And he did. But he sold it to Fat Boy. I think it was the second time I watched this episode that it clicked that, like, our middleman has, like, if you need to go buy stuff at an auction, like, yeah, you know, here's 400 grand.
Yeah, we're down to our last 400 grand.
Yeah. What happened to O2STK in the Mirror Universe?
Right.
So many questions. So little show. Damn it. Dubby decides that, well, you're going to have to go steal this back from Fat Boy. Middleman flat refuses.
Yeah.
Evil middleman flat refuses.
Yeah.
So she decides to go back and get Evil Lacey and Evil Noser to help.
Yep.
And they do. I love it.
But before that, we get the reveal about Tyler.
Oh, that's right. Because
Ida tells her about the middle boy, that he used to be
a real middleman.
And that it was, you know, when he lost his middle boy. And then we see that flash of Tyler being killed by a mysterious red anodized gun.
And I love that Tyler looks like he came out of an Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Or the start of Fifth Element or something.
Yeah.
Like,
the other thing is, Tyler's got a goatee in this universe.
Yes. Yes.
But he's not evil. But he is the mirror version.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means for Tyler.
As soon as I realized the first time I watched this that Tyler was the middle boy in the mirror universe, because I'd already had a weird feeling in my stomach as soon as Tyler had the Bluetooth on and took the Fat Boy job, that he liked this.
Well, so here's the interesting thing about this sort of flip. We talked about that Tyler is, he's the middle boy in this universe, and he could have been the middle boy in our universe. Mm-hmm. And what I'm thinking, if it's a mirror, in our universe, Tyler was a potential middle boy, and he was a really good guy, and then he gets recruited by Neville, possibly the mirror middleman, and sort of possibly, if we got to see further, maybe slowly corrupted. So maybe in this universe, he was a bad guy who got recruited to be the middle boy, and that's why he has the goatee, because he's evil, and slowly became corrupted to the side of good.
Yeah. Maybe.
Until he got blasted in the face by someone who, at this point, I'm starting to suspect I know who it is.
Yeah. You're getting an inkling based on the character setups you've seen of everybody else.
And who we haven't seen yet.
Yes. Yeah. Who we've not run into.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we see Tyler get shot by a red ray gun.
Yep.
And I think Ida even says, like, we have no leads on it other than that ray gun.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's a very, like, Roger Rabbit setup of, like, we're just looking for that laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Dubby heads back to the evil sublet. Ask Lacey for help along with Evil Noser. I love Lacey's Fat Boy Command is locked up tighter than a public drinking fountain. Like, that's just an offhand thing that would be completely on lockdown here.
Yeah, no public drinking fountains.
Yeah, that's crazy. You wouldn't get into those. But they're not going to be able to break in.
Right.
Breaking in is crazy.
Right. Well, she gives this speech, and it's a great speech, and it's the chemistry between those characters, between Britt Morgan and Natalie Morales, is so good and so strong that even when she's playing in a sort of mirror version of the character and Natalie Morales is playing regular Dubby, you can see that connection between the two of them.
I need you to listen. Because every time you look at me, I can see how much I hurt you. And I'm sure I had my reasons. Everyone does. But I can't think of a single one that justifies you being in that darning camp. And I wish I could take back all the pain that I caused you. All I can do is say I'm sorry. I wish I'd been stronger. But I'm a different person now. And I can't imagine a universe where I don't need your friendship.
A genre show aimed at a younger audience. You could see where people could justify to themselves, I don't need to bring this much depth to this performance.
Yeah, for sure.
That this can be silly. This doesn't call for it. I can say these lines hammy. And there are several times where Lacey really pulls my heartstrings.
Yeah, Lacey she feels like the star, the artist and the activist who is in a world that disappoints her constantly.
Yeah,
like you get the ennui of it.
She confronts. She speaks.
Yeah.
Art. They agree instead to get someone to break them in or to get them in. And who do they know that works there? Joe 90 Esquire. So there's like no hesitation. They just throw down photos that Noser has of Joe 90 with girls. They don't even explain who they're embarrassing him to particularly.
Well, he was at their – he's not supposed to be at their hideout.
Oh, he's at their speakeasy and he works for Fat Boy. That's exactly it. Yes.
So despite his fear of the beard –
the beard.
The beard, of course, being a standard Fat Boy torture protocol that starts with a beard of bees.
Yes, yeah. The beginning line of their protocol that is in a book somewhere that HR has is beard of bees, the beard. I love that. I had to pause that and feel like, what?
That's where it starts.
And they just like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, whatever.
In this world, it's locked down like a drinking fountain. It just makes sense.
They get into Fat Boy. And I love that they walk into a room that's just got a bunch of guns, and Dubby's like, okay, machine gun, or assault rifle, weird-looking thing, bound to be the...
yes.
Like, you know, what gun don't you recognize? That's probably the phase polaron cannon, which the phase polaron cannon is a gun from Star Trek.
Right.
I would not have caught that reference. I had to look that up.
Yeah, I didn't know that one off the top of my head either. But weapons are not the only thing in that room.
Elsewhere in that room, actually right behind Lacey, because after they pick the gun up, I think somebody leans on a big red button and it turns a light on.
Hey, in an evil layer, you have buttons to turn lights on.
It's
evil
great.
Layer or a 70s retro room.
And what is clearly manservant Neville with a goatee.
Yes.
Frozen, just covered in ice in a stand-up kind of Han thing. I love Lacey's like, what's behind me? What are y'all looking at? What's behind me? Like, she doesn't want to turn around.
Yeah.
And then... Like, Lacey just flips out, and they realize that it's manservant Neville. They've offhand mentioned earlier that there are no security cameras.
Right.
Which makes it easier to walk in with Joe 90.
Right.
The reason now we realize that there are no security cameras is because manservant Neville is on ice and has not been running the company.
Yeah.
So who's been secretly running the company?
Who else?
A red laser gun gets pointed at our heroes, and it's Dubby.
Yep.
We get an inkling to this because manservant Neville wakes up and says, haven't you done enough to me?
Yes.
And like, you know it's coming.
And also he talks, we get the sense of he was trying to create like a socialist paradise.
And that's kind of what I wondered about when she first woke up was like, but he's feeding them all soup and like, no, I know this is not going well.
Yeah.
But I think he's meaning well and realizing at some point he realized that it wasn't working.
So maybe he's not evil in this universe. And what does that mean for Neville in our universe?
Yeah. And that was my next thought was like, oh, crap. Then that means that Neville in our universe is evil.
Right.
And that means that Tyler in our universe is probably evil.
Yep. That whole train of thought, that train of thought I had earlier of the, okay, I get this now, suddenly reversed itself. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what I thought I knew.
And in basically one move, this simple little goofy comic show did more with a parallel universe who's who, deepened both universes' stories made me want to go back and rewatch episodes, knowing now that Tyler might not be as to his core altruistic.
Right.
Because, again, everything that's ever been said is going to get brought up again in this show.
Right.
Everything is canon as soon as it comes out of their mouths.
Yep.
Evil Wendy's got the drop on him. Well, almost gets the drop on him. Our Wendy, being middleman, unlike Evil Wendy, our Wendy's trained by Sensei Ping.
Yes, indeed.
Wait. There's just one thing you haven't counted on. I was trained by Sensei Ping.
She says that, and it really hadn't occurred to me. It was like, oh, crap, different lives, different timelines.
Yeah.
You don't know this stuff.
Yeah.
And R. Wendy immediately kicks the shit out of her.
Yes.
Boom.
Yep.
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah. She still wakes. It was a good try. She comes out in the gear and I'm like,
works.
Oh, they're going to get out of here.
This
is great.
Yeah. And then the guards come around and, boom, Evil Wendy walks out with her ID card and is like,
there's just one thing you haven't counted on. I can prove my identity.
Yeah, you can't just swap my clothes. Like, I have an ID. I can prove who I am. Again, this show is great for setting up tropes and then just walking away from where they ought to go. There's no like, which one's the real one? No, me. Here's my ID.
Yeah.
So just when things are dire, evil middleman bursts in.
On the middle hog.
And I love that he's just riding through on a bike, punching people.
Yes. Yes.
It's great.
Eat hot death. You know what's great about this is it's the magician's trick. They get you looking at one hand so you don't see the other one. Because of course the middleman was gonna show up. Like they even implied in the previous scene that he was gonna, come through for her. Ida's talking to him and he's gonna come through. And I had totally forgotten about that because I'm focused on the, oh, she's going to identity swap. Oh, wait, that's not working. What's going to happen now? And my mind didn't immediately go to the middleman's going to run in until he did. And I'm like, of course he did.
They set up a trope joke that I'm expecting the punchline from.
Yeah.
They don't give me that punchline.
Right.
And I'm uncertain for a moment where I don't know where the next joke's going to go.
Yeah.
And then they hit me from the side.
Yeah. It's a great piece of writing. It is, if you will, elegant in its simplicity.
Well played. Well played. Once evil middleman saves them, now they have the gun they need. They head straight over to the city center.
Yes, as the captions inform us.
Yes. Geographic center of the city,
mm-hmm.
Which I love that they don't agonize too much over standing in the exact same spot, which they said earlier. You basically just shoot a laser at the sky, laser comes straight back down, and the swap happens. Like, boom.
Yeah.
They're now back in the real universe.
That cross-time middleman salute, though.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
That was so good.
Yes, because when they fire the laser, it opens the black hole, and we get to see him across the two.
Yeah.
And you see their middleman realize what he could be.
Yep.
And our middleman is a bit disturbed by what he could fall to.
But he salutes him. And he gets a salute back.
Yeah.
It's a great moment.
Yeah. So back in the real universe, or our universe, at the normal sublet, I love that Wendy notices that evil middleman gave her back the bracelet.
Yeah.
Because our middleman is a little bit concerned about seeing himself. He was wondering just how, I like how he asked it, you know, how far am I from him?
Right.
And I love Wendy's answer.
How far from that other middleman am I, really? I have to say I find it a mite unsettling.
Maybe, but it works both ways. I know if you, all the yous out there, weren't you to the core, I would have never made it out alive. So thanks.
No. Thank you, Debbie.
Like, well, if you know, if you're worried that you're not far from him, he's not far from you. Like, you don't have to fall to him. He could, I really love that little tiny lesson. And it also, the epilogue of this cuts back and forth a lot. I love that they go ahead and spend some time showing us that the mirror universe is going to be okay, or is going to be different now. Because we get a scene back in the mirror universe where evil middleman walks back, flips the switch on Ida.
And she transforms into our Ida.
Yes.
Yes.
And then Ida says, let's kick some coil-tailed bacon. Which I've heard let's kick this pig as a euphemism before, and I love it, but I never knew what the etymology of it was, and I had to look it up. Kick this hog is a start this bike Harley reference.
Oh, nice.
Because you kick a bike to start it, and kick this hog, kick this pig, kick this coil-tailed bacon, just a really weird oblique evil Ida reference. And we also see, after sending Dubby back, middleman has looked over at Lacey and says,
you know, like the way you handled yourself back there at Fatboy Command. You ever considered the exciting field of temporary employment?
Mm-hmm. Which, speaking to Dubby keeping her painting going, I love that even though this clearly takes over your life, being middleman, you don't have a real name anymore.
Right. And nobody
retires.
But
it's still temp job. It is still temp work.
Still temp job, yeah. Yeah.
Like at no point, like it's still a side gig.
That's probably because O2STK does not want to pay for insurance.
Oh, yeah. No, if everybody's contract. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. I think Uber might be an evil organization. Are they totally,
of course
totally
they are.
Like the Scepter, the Hydra?
Of course they are.
So in these cuts back and forth, back in our universe, you've got a Wendy painting what is going to be her last painting of the series. And it's just a big portrait of middleman.
Yeah.
And she's talking to her mom, and her mom actually says that she sounds happy.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is that everything that Wendy's been painting up to this point has been like the monsters and the scary stuff. And Lacey's always commenting on it. And so her basically painting this idealized good guy of her boss is a sign that, she's at peace right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she even says like, no, I just feel like everything's right with the world.
Yeah.
And knowing that this is a show that knows it's going out,
it
really makes that ending matter differently to me. Because I feel like they were in a show that is relentless in its optimism. Not that there's not problems.
Yeah.
There are definitely bad guys.
There are trout zombies out there, man.
Sometimes the bad guys win. I think in the Kevin Sorbo episode, they even refer to the Fabulous Face, who is an old middleman villain that replaced everyone in the White House with evil clones, but no one noticed. So like middleman doesn't beat all of these.
Right.
Vampires have killed a couple of them. Yep. Like, but yet there's an optimism. Like everything's real. The world is neat. I always think of the comic Planetary with like the world's a strange place. Let's keep it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because in some ways ABC Family was a bad fit for the middleman. Like it definitely drove off people who might've gone to the show because they thought it was going to be a little Pollyanna.
The 700 lead in didn't help. 700 club lead in.
That doesn't help anyone really. But in some ways it being on ABC Family makes sense because it is at its heart an optimistic, upbeat show.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't totally out of place for it to be there in my mind. Like, it didn't look entirely out of place.
No.
It's just that there was no channel identity for that channel then.
Right.
I feel like there was a moment there where ABC Family could have gotten another couple of goofy shows and maybe an animation block, and Middleman would have fit right in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, that's network problems, not Middleman problems.
Yeah, yeah. This is also a couple of years early for Twitter. There's just several factors that kept this, I think, from finding its audience.
I am familiar with the notion of shows that were before their time and did not catch on, tragically.
Yes, yes. I've heard. going to go ahead and take a moment to just mention Lacey's middle outfit.
Yes.
Clearly, the Mirror Universe middleman does not have the Eisenhower jacket fetish because Lacey is in what I think the Wikia for middleman describes as a schoolgirl outfit, which is not entirely accurate.
No.
It is kind of similar to Debbie's vest outfit.
Yeah, but her later vest outfit, it's sexier.
Wow. And yeah, there's a garter.
My note reads, Lacey and middleman gear is a fetish I didn't know I had.
Yeah, I think mine just says Lacey's middle outfit, damn.
And also, the middleman of the Imperial Universe, he's giving himself a shave. He's putting on some clothes.
Yes.
He's meeting his counterpart halfway.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like that, like, I don't think he's ever going to be our middleman.
No, and he shouldn't be. In that world, that middleman doesn't belong.
Yeah. But he's going to be their middleman. Like, yes. Does he drink chocolate milk? Like, I really want to know what he drinks.
Oh, my God.
Actually, well, we see him pour from a flask into a thermos.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if he's drinking coffee and whiskey or what. But
yeah, I don't know what the opposite of milk is. I feel like there's got to be one, but I don't know what it is.
Oh, the opposite of milk sounds like an indie film I do not want to watch. Well, any final thoughts on Middleman?
I would like to spend a few minutes cursing you again for introducing me to a show I didn't know I missed.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you have not gotten to watch the 2009 table read yet.
No, I missed one because I watched what was episode 14. Not really, there was an episode 13 that was also a lost graphic novel translated to a table read. So I have that to look forward to.
I was told recently that the way to do the table reads is to have the comic with you.
Which is not easy because they're kind of pricey on Amazon right now.
But yes, you can continue on for a couple more stories.
And you're going to want to.
And then you can curse my name. Thanks again, Randy.
Great to be here.
And until next time, I'm Les.
I'm Randy.
And this show is just too good to live.
You think I sound happy?
Well, Mother, that might be because all is right with the world.
Hey, it's Les. Did you think we were done? Did you think we had run out of show to cover? Well, then you don't know the middleman. And that's kind of what this entire podcast is about. So let me tell you, there were comic books. And next episode, we're going to go just into the comic book universe. Then we're going to cover each of the table reads, 2009 and 2014, separately as if they were television episodes, because let's be real, they pretty much are. So join us for the next 3 weeks as the show continues on. We'll pair that with interviews as usual, and I hope to see you there. Well, I mean, I won't see you. It's a podcast, but anyway.
The Good Die Young is an independently run podcast produced by Les Weiler and hosted as part of the Permanent Record Network. We can be found on the web at thegooddieyoungtv.com. Les can be found doing weekly television commentary at www.thetvdudes.com. Thanks for listening.